So welcome back, guys. I'm your host Jaideep, and we have my co-host.
Hi, I'm Piyush.
So we have a very special guest today with us. His name is Swastik Shinde. He is a third year BS MS student learning at ISER Tirupati with physics as his major and earth and climate science as his minor. So his research interests are stars, exoplanets, earth sciences and geology, and he's also an astro enthusiast. So, and we are going to speak about exoplanets. So let's start. Swastik, we know about planets, but what is exactly an exoplanet? Can you explain it about us for the info of audience?
Yeah, sure. So simply speaking, exoplanet is just a planet which orbits any star which is not our sun. So the important point is it's orbiting a star, because there can be planets which do not orbit a star. They are just wandering alone in the space. Like, they are just like lonely planets, which we call them as rogue planets. So rogue planets are not called as exoplanets, but the ones which orbit any star or the sun are called exoplanets. So in 2006, International Astronomical Union defined a planet as any celestial body which is in orbit around the sun. And so in case of exoplanets, around any star, and it has sufficient mass to assume a spherical shape. And then finally, it has cleared its orbit. By that, I mean it's not crossing any other planet's orbit. Like, for example, in our solar system, Pluto is crossing the orbit of Uranus. So in case of planet, this should not happen. Any other planet's orbit. So if planet is satisfying all these, then it's called a planet. So that definition was made for a planet of our solar system. So there is no exact definition for exoplanet, but then we can kind of use this to explain an exoplanet. So that's what we call exoplanet.
And are those exoplanets like our own planets that we find in our solar system?
Sorry, can you go again?
Are those exoplanets like our own planets? Do we see like Jupiter or Venus or Earth maybe a habitable planet? Or like those exoplanets are like quite different from the planets that we see in our solar system?
Yeah, so there are four types. So there are four brief types of exoplanets. So like you can start from terrestrial, from their orbital sizes. So you can start from terrestrial, which are the smallest one. Then there are the super Earths, there are the Neptune-like, and there are the gas giants. So terrestrials are like rocky planets, which are really which are small in size. They can be smaller than Earth or with the equal size of Earth. So those are like made of rock, like similar to Earth, which is made of rock. Then there are the super Earths. So super Earths are about 2 to 3 times larger than the Earth. And they can be made up of rock, or they can have some gaseous, or they can be both. And then there are the Neptune-like planets, which are made of gas. And their sizes can be similar to the Neptune or Uranus. And then finally, there are the big, huge gas giants, which again, as their name says, are giant, humongous. They are like bigger than the Neptune-like, and their size can be similar to Jupiter or even bigger than the Jupiter. And they are made of gas. And then, to compare with our solar system, we see the terrestrial planets in our solar system as the inner planets, Jupiter, Venus, then Earth, Mercury, and Mars. Those are the types of terrestrial planets. Then we also see the Neptune-like planets as the Neptune and Uranus. But in case of those two, they are icy bodies, and the reason is they are like really far away from the sun. So the temperature is very cold there, and then because of that, the gas is compressed from a solid ice. And then there are the Jupiter-likes, which is Jupiter and Saturn, is made of gas. So we don't see any super Earths in our solar system, but they are out there. And a special type of gas, two special types of gas giants are there, which are the cotton candy planets and cotton candy planets, because they are very less in mass, but they are humongous, similar to the cotton candy we eat. It's the kind of weightless, but it's huge, right? Mm-hmm. So similar to that. And then there are the hot Jupiter planets. So as the name says, they are like really, really hot. And the reason is they are very close to the sun. So those two are like special types of gas giants. So we don't see super Earths, cotton candy, and hot Jupiter in our solar system itself. But then we do see terrestrials and Jupiter-likes, gas giants, and Neptune-like planets in our solar system.
Okay.
Yeah.
Great. And who discovered the first exoplanet and how? Basically, because the size of the planet is quite small compared to the star itself. So how can we detect it? And how the first person who discovered it, how did he detect it?
Yeah, so the first evidence which we have found was noted early 1970s, but then it wasn't recognized until 2016. So about a 100-year gap was there between the evidence noted and then the evidence being recognized. But that evidence, based on that evidence, there was no discovery of planet. So it took about, about 70 years for the first discovery. So in 1992, two radio astronomers, Alexander Wolfgang and Dale Frail, they discovered two planets orbiting a pulsar. So pulsar is a neutron star, which is rotating really, really rapidly. Because of which it kind of emits pulses on its axis. The pulses are in a radio band. And then those stars are called pulsars. So those are like dead zombie stars. And then they discovered two planets orbiting that pulsar. So that was the first discovery. And the discovery was made using something we now know as the pulsar timing method. So it's like the speed of pulsar is kind of constant. So over years, so like for 100 years or more than 100 years, it's constant. So although it changes, but the change is very slow. I mean, like it will stay constant for about 100 to 200 years. So, and it's like they rotate for like 200 times per second. So that fast.
Yeah. Mm.
Yeah. So, what happens is that? So, in a second, in first second, you observed like 200 pulses. In second, you observe a few less pulses. And then for some time, you observe less pulses. Then again, constant 200 pulses. Again, less pulses, constant 200 pulses. And that dip, is happening constantly after a period of time.
Hmm.
So based on that, you can say that there is a planet, there is something over there, which is kind of like orbiting that thing, a star, with a given period of time. So that's how they detected that there is a planet over there. So that was the first discovery. But then in 1995, there was another one. So that was around a sun-like star. So a star which has like that, the first one was a pulsar, right?
Mm-hmm.
Pulsar is like, it emits X-rays and it's like a dead star, so no one can live there.
Mm-hmm.
But then if it's a sun-like star, by sun-like star I mean like it has temperature similar to our sun, and because of which it emits in a bandwidth similar to sun.
Mm-hmm.
So in 1995, a planet was discovered around a sun-like star. The star is named as Tritium Pegasi, 51 Plague for short. And the planet after the star, the planet is named as 51 Pegasi B. So that was discovered by Dieter Kalos and Michael Mayer. Michael Mayer. So in 2019, the Nobel Prize of Physics partly went to that discovery. So this planet was discovered by something called as radial velocity method. So radial velocity, I mean, it's kind of like Doppler effect, which we use in sound. So a train is coming towards you, and then at that time you observe that the frequency, the frequency is increasing, and then when it goes away, it's decreasing. So similar to that, as the star is coming towards you, the wavelength is decreasing, and now you will see as it is blue, kind of blue shift, and it's going away from you. Then there is increasing wavelength, and then it's kind of like the value is increasing. So you observe a shift there. So although the change is really, really negligible, as what happens there is that the star, if there is no planet on the star, it should be it should be revolving around itself, right? At around a point at its center, what we call as the center of mass. But then if planet is there, so it's like there's a tug of war going between them. So the planet is pulling star towards itself, and the star is pulling planet towards itself. But then the star has more mass than the planet, so star is always going to win. But then what will happen is that instead of star staying at one point and planet orbiting it, both of them will rotate something called as the center of mass of the system. So there'll be a center of mass of both of them somewhere on the line which connects them, which will obviously will be closer to the star.
Yes.
Which we'll observe that the star, instead of being constant one position, is kind of wobbling. And that wobble creates this blue shift and red shift. And now you can just imagine how small this wobble will be. I mean, in case of Jupiter, the mass of Jupiter is few thousands of times less than the star. Okay, and our sun. And then in that case, the wobble also will be like really, really small. You can just imagine how small will the wobble be. So the redshift and blue shift will be really, really small. But if you can observe it, then based on the period of the redshift and blue shift, it's happening, repeating, and if it's repeating periodically, based on that, you can also say, and based on that, they observed the that planet, 50 Pegasi.
Okay.
Yeah. There are like other methods also. So like these two which I said are the indirect methods. So there are a few more of them, and then there are the direct methods. Direct means like you just observe the planet with the telescope. That's direct. And indirect is like you observe the effect that planet has on the star to say that there is a planet.
Yeah, these exoplanets are really pain. You know, they give very tough time for astronomers because they are not easy to detect. Even if we take like the planets which are similar to our Earth and which might be habitable, so how many of them have we found exactly? Do you know the numbers? I don't remember exactly.
Okay, so the terrestrial planets are the terrestrial exoplanets which we have found are 165. So out of about 4,400 detected, just 165 are terrestrials. And then again, even less of them are habitable in the habitable zone.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's really fascinating to hear, because like there are thousands of systems in our neighborhood, but it's really tough and difficult to find those habitable exoplanets, and also there is a limited telescopes or the tech we have, which makes it more difficult to find.
Yeah.
Okay, in the movie Interstellar, we see that a planet is revolving around a black hole. Is that even possible? And if yes, have we discovered one yet?
Yeah, so it is possible. I mean, theoretically, we can have a planet orbiting a black hole. If it's like outside of its, you know, I forgot the name. The Kvaerschner radius, if it's outside of the Kvaerschner radius of the black hole, then it is possible to have the planet orbiting the black hole if it's outside of the event horizon. Yes, so it's possible, but then the thing is to observe it has to have some indirect effect on the black hole. So in that case, we have to observe the black hole, which we can't.
Okay, yeah.
I think we have to observe the planet itself. Again, to observe the planet, we have to observe the the light getting reflected off the planet, which in the case of black hole isn't happening because there is no light coming from the black hole. So we haven't discovered one yet, and it's even harder to discover a planet orbiting a black hole than discovering an exomoon. Okay.
Everything becomes impossible when it comes to practical. For example, if we try to talk about string theory and all that stuff, let's keep that aside, but it becomes like, you know, impossible to prove those things. Just like this one. Planet revolving around a black hole. Imagine living on it.
You can live on it. You can live on it. Like there are a few possible ways to live on it.
Yeah. Speaking of which, we all watch movies, and so we have seen the movie which was by James Cameron, which was Avatar. So it is shown that, and there is a planet, not exactly a planet, but a moon. Habitable moon revolving around a gas giant, so which can also be called as an exomoon. So are there any exomoons we have found in current reality right now?
I don't think so. No, I mean, there was an article which said that they might have found an exomoon, but according to the catalogs, no, we haven't found any exomoon yet, because it's like it's really hard to find them. So like exomoons are like orbiting the planet, and then we first have to observe the get in the planet, and after hitting the planet, if there is any effect on the planet, I mean, if the planet is having some other motions. So that those motions can say that there might be an exomoon. So it's hard to detect the motions, motions or wobbling of the star itself. So it's even harder to detect these kinds of motion on a planet, because it's a really small body. And it's an even smaller effect. Small, like the star will have a huge effect on the planet than a moon will have. So it's really, really small effect the moon is having on the planet. So with the current technologies, it's hard. It's really, really hard, nearly impossible to detect any exomoon.
Okay. So how important do you think it is for scientists to continue look for exoplanets? Because we have found like thousands of them right now, and we are still searching for them. Why is it so much important that we still do our research and still try to find out more and more exoplanets?
So according to me, there are two reasons. First is the curiosity of human. So since a long time, we have been asking that, are we alone in the universe? Is there anyone out there? And the answer to that is search and search. So we have to keep looking, and we have to keep looking for exoplanets. So if there is an exoplanet out there which is habitable and which has an atmosphere similar to Earth or to the one which can have life. So that might say that there might be life out there. So we have to keep looking to get we keep looking because it's a curiosity. Mm. That's the first thing. And the second thing is that we have we have observed a lot about our solar system, and then we have depicted how it might have formed, how it might have evolved. But then to confirm our theories about the solar system, we can't confirm our theory of our solar system if we don't know the same thing is happening with other systems. If there is any system out there which is going through the same process as we theorize, until then we can't confirm that the same thing happened with us. Like we say that there was a formation of a planetary disk, and then after the formation of planetary disk, all those planetesimals came together to form a planet, to form a planet, and then there was this debris disk, and then all of it cleared and all. So that's the theory of the formation of planets, right? But to confirm it, we can't confirm it using our solar system because it's already in an evolved state. We have already like 5 billion years ahead of what we are saying now. To confirm it, we have to observe outside. If there is any other solar system, is there any other exoplanet, any other planet which is going through the similar stages? So that's I think the reason we should keep looking.
Yeah. So
so let's assume that that extraterrestrial life exists, and other than that there is a super intelligent kind of alien and that thing. But let's assume that we are the only life form in our galaxy, and other creatures have decided that not to interfere with them, though, like just leave them. Who cares about them?
Yeah, that might be possible.
Yeah, because the possibility is vast.
Anything is possible in this case.
Who knows, if we find an extraterrestrial life or something like that, we might be able to communicate with them.
Here and they don't want to
They won't talk to us. They're going to block us.
Yeah, they blocked us.
My next question is that we have found planets that have atmosphere, right?
Yeah, we have found planets.
So how can we say if it is habitable or not? So if looking at Venus, we can tell that it's not habitable. But how can we tell for exoplanets that may have atmosphere, terrestrial planets, that they are habitable or not?
Okay, so there are two things at play here. First is the planet being in the habitability zone of the star. So there is a zone in the around the star, let's say a belt, in which the water will, the temperature is enough to keep the water in liquid, the water there in liquid state. So if you go behind the, away from the star, outside of the zone, the water will condense from ice. Or if you move towards the sun, towards the star, out of the zone, the water will, evaporate. So for a planet to be habitable, it has to be in that zone. So that zone will change based on the star's temperature, the star's surface temperature, and the size of star and all those things. Okay, the luminosity of star, the size of star, temperature of star. Based on that, the habitability zone will change, where it will be and how large it will be. Okay, so if a planet is in there, it will be a habitable planet. And to observe if it has atmospheres or not, what we do is that there is light passing through the atmosphere, right? And then, so as we have observed the spectrum, absorption spectrum of our sun itself. Similar to that, we can observe the absorption spectrum of that planet. So based on which, based on the spectrum, we can say that what kind of gases are in the atmosphere of that planet. So studying that, we can say if it has good enough atmosphere, like if it has oxygen there, water vapors there, or nitrogen there, or CO2 there, these kind of gases, if the planet has there or not, we can depict that from the absorption spectrum. So that is called as the habitable planet in the habitable zone. But then if it has to have life, there are other factors too which play there. If in case of Earth, those factors are the presence of moon, and then the right amount of oxygen, right amount of nitrogen, the presence of water vapors, and there are a lot of things which play here. So if even if the planet has the right size of moon, I mean, like for in the case of Earth, the moon is just the right size, because which keeps us from wobbling or rotating like fast. If that, if the wobbling, if the moon wasn't there, or if the moon was smaller than it is now, the Earth would have wobbled and we would have like really, really fast seasons. Like today it's raining, tomorrow it's like, today is like 0 degrees, tomorrow it's 50 degrees, after tomorrow is like minus 10 degrees. There will be like huge changes. So the moon has kept the seasons and the Earth from wobbling. Okay, so like, there are other similar factors which also play here. So if even if that planet has all these, has like these factors, we call them as barriers. Okay, so even if that planet has, you know, passed all these barriers, then so the final barrier is the formation and evolution of life.
Yes,
we can say about that sitting over here. The planet may be in the habitability zone. It may be habitable. It has crossed. It may have crossed all these barriers. But then, if it has life or not, we can't say that by just sitting right here. If we don't have any sign of that,
okay.
So there might be alien life out there on that planet, but we can't say if it is there or not until and unless we observe inside for that. And we can't observe it by just like looking through a telescope and say that look, there's an alien there.
Okay,
yeah, people think that you know, especially young kids, that looking through the telescope on that looking at Saturn through the telescope or gas giants like Jupiter, they might find a life there, someone waving at them. Really, like young kids think of that.
Maybe a UFO on patrol.
Yeah, and you know, one more thing is that like when you look out there with a telescope, you are like kind of looking in the past. So
yeah,
maybe there is a like right in at this time there might be life there, but then in the past it wasn't there, and you're looking in the past. So you are seeing that planet when it didn't have life. That also might be the case.
Hmm. Yeah. So now we are towards the end of our show. So do you want to share anything interesting about exoplanets?
Yeah. So we have found like really different kinds of exoplanets. Like one is like made up of lava. Totally, it's like totally made of lava. It's like one part is total lava, other part is like solid part. I mean, it's totally locked to the sun. It's orbiting. It's very, very close to the sun. Okay, so yeah. So this lava and all these things we have depicted based on the distance of the planet from the star and the temperature, all those things. Okay, then we have found a few planets which might be where it might be raining like diamonds or glass. I mean, and there is another planet based on its atmospheric observations, which is like having really, really fast winds on it. Like, there are like various different kinds of planets out there, exoplanets out there. And what I think is that, you know, to know about these exoplanets, like how they are and how they are, how their atmospheres are, how their you know, interiors are, or how they are on the surfaces, we also have to study more and more about Earth and itself too. I mean, while studying the exoplanets, we also have to, I mean, we don't know much about Earth and it too. Mm. Yeah, like, we know just theoretically that we have a core and we have a... No one has observed it. No one has gone like 6,400. There is no hole which is 6,400 meters deep. Mm. So, like, while studying about exoplanets, we also have to study about our planet to get more and more info about those planets itself. So, like, these two have to go like hand in hand. And that's like the beauty of exoplanet and the Earth. Like, they go together hand in hand. Or I'll say not just the Earth, but the solar system. Mm. All the eight planets and other bodies.
Yeah, it's fascinating because humans are really curious species.
Yeah.
Finding or exploring about planets, that we might discover something new and something related to extraterrestrial life, which is really fascinating because it's in our blood, right? We want to know things, we want to know the truth. And it eventually comes out because truth comes out. Truth is the reality. Science is the reality, in fact.
Yes. Yeah, but it's always changing.
Yeah.
So I want to thank Swastik for joining us. We had a really great time. So we will be signing off now. We will be signing off now. So stay tuned for our next episode and stay curious.